as of this coming Monday, Massachusetts officially enters phase four of its reopening, what Governor Baker originally described as what would be our new normal. That means that for the first time since March 8th, 2020, fans will be allowed inside the TD Garden. We figure what better time, therefore. Yeah. There he is, because we're going to check. I don't even have to introduce you anymore, Chris. Everyone knows that's Chris Siderick for Check the Score. A little bit excited,
hey,
Chris?
Oh, I can't tell you how excited I am. The prospect of being able to get back to a place where it can be responsible and safe to have fans in the stands is beyond exhilarating.
So what do we want to know from listeners?
Well, so I'm really curious how anxious people are to go back to sporting events. Are folks champing at the bit here to get back into the stands? Or are folks going to be a little slower to come back and kind of see how things go as more and more folks get vaccinated? And they can jump in, as always, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. They're going to start with a 12% capacity. So I think tickets may be hard to come by, at least initially. But we'll see kind of as the year goes on how and when that gets expanded.
That's right. So if you are a Bruins fan, a Celtics fan, a Sox fan, Patriots, are you going back to the stands? Call us and tell us what you think. So, Chris, with that prospect of watching Boston teams in the stands on the horizon, there is a ton of news about our Boston teams. Let's hit through it. Lightning round. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many options here to start. We could talk about LeBron James being a part owner of the Red Sox, the Patriots throwing an absolute mountain of money around in free agency. You've got the Bruins, a game tonight in Buffalo against the Sabres, which has been affected by COVID. They had to call off their morning skate. As of 1:30, they've tweeted that as of now, the game will go on as scheduled, but we'll have to see. I actually, though, would really love to start with the Celtics. That's the team that we left off talking about last time we did a Check the Score.
All right. So you told us going into the All-Star break, we were talking about how badly Boston needed to rally behind a team. And you said, okay, so that means the Celtics have to find a winning streak over the last four games before the break. They did. They found a winning streak before the All-Star break.
Yeah, and that's about all they found. They are 1-3 since the All-Star break. I was really hopeful that if they went into the break hot, they'd be able to carry that momentum through, but clearly that has not been the case. So since the All-Star break, they've lost to the Brooklyn Nets and the Utah Jazz, which you can understand a little bit. Those are pretty good teams. But last night, a really bad loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They just started slow, looked sluggish. They were down 21 at one point, and they did rally and fight back. They got to within 4 points a couple of times in the fourth quarter. And then really the final nail in the coffin here, with about 2 minutes left in the fourth, Jaylen Brown had a chance to cut the lead to three and missed.
Brown catch and shoot, rebounded by Garland. Garland up ahead with Okoro, goes there. Oh, Okoro throws it down.
Just an absolute dagger. And the Celtics just looked like they couldn't close out. They looked tired. They had kind of bad body language throughout this game, slumped shoulders. And really, the thing that we've been talking about all year with this team so far, where is that killer instinct? Where is the heart? Where are the guys who are going to pick each other up and rally and say, no, we refuse to lose this game? So far, they just haven't shown that.
So it's so interesting. After, you know, 20 years of always having a team where the answer to all those questions was, yeah, absolutely, here we are, right? We're turning to the Celtics, and they can't do it for us. To that point, Chris, and, you know, there was like all set up to this, but you shared some tape with me earlier today that is so mind-boggling that I just want you to talk about it.
Yeah, this is pretty great. So Danny Ainge, the Celtics GM, has a regular appearance on the Sports Hub, and I just had to pull what he said about this team coming off of last night's loss. So this is from earlier this morning.
We've struggled to close out games, and we've struggled with consistency. And I think that, you know, you hear me talk a lot about resolve. It seems like we don't have a lot of characteristics of a really good team, for sure.
So that, as you said, Tiziana, is staggering, yeah.
Yeah, and I just want to point out, listen, if you're one of those listeners who doesn't necessarily follow sports, surely you can hear that it would not be normal to hear a coach in the middle of a season or an owner in the middle of a season talking about a team like that. So what does that mean for what the Celtics do now, Chris?
It's really interesting. I was talking to our engineer, Marquise, earlier, and he said half the people are stunned that Danny Ainge would say this, and half the people are probably like, well, what took you so long? What have you been watching? Because this team has really struggled with this specifically, really for the last couple of years. They've got all the young talent you could want. They've got two of the best young players in the league, and they just haven't been able to put it together. They haven't seemed to be able to find that chemistry where if one guy makes a mistake, the other guys can pick him up and hold each other accountable on the floor. It's all about hustle and heart in basketball. It's really so much is about effort. You can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have the effort and if you don't function as a team, it's going to be so much harder to be successful. And, you know, you look back at this team, the expectations were so high. They were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. It looked set up to make a deep run again. And I go back to what Jason Tatum said after they got bounced from the Eastern Conference Finals last year. He was asked if the team needed to be mentally tougher. He said no. And I was just so taken aback by that because it seems pretty clear to everyone watching, this team needs to get tougher all around and really maximize the talent of the individual players.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. 800-423-8255 to tell us whether you are going to get back in the stands for your favorite Boston sports team. We've got Sean on the line. Sean, I think you're in your car in Canton. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So what's your plan?
I'm a teacher during the day, but I've worked at the TD Garden for the last 15 years as well. And we don't have any idea when or if we're coming back sometime soon. But I don't know how particularly safe I would feel with having thousands of extra interactions during the year. It's tough enough during the school year. So I'm partially vaccinated. I've had my first shot. But I don't know just long-term how safe that would be with that many people kind of coming through the same building.
Sean, is there anything that would make you feel sure that you were safe?
I think it would have to be another year, maybe when there's just more of that herd immunity where more people are vaccinated. I just don't know. I don't know how safe I would feel with just masks and social precautions.
Sean, I really appreciate that call. I think, Chris, that puts in perspective the moment that we are in. I mean, Sean, clearly working at TD Garden, plus I'm assuming, given, Sean, you worked at TD Garden, that you're a sports fan. Gillette Stadium for the Patriots, that's an outdoor stadium. Fenway is an outdoor stadium. TD Garden, which we have two teams that play there, indoor stadium. Are we going to see maybe people go outdoors first, or do you think there's a two-year tail before people really feel safe cheering on their teams in person?
I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. This is uncharted territory, obviously. I think anybody who tells you they know exactly how this is going to go is kind of making it up because we've never seen anything like this. As I said, we're starting with 12% capacity is what they're allowed to bring into the building. And the TD Garden has had to submit this huge plan in terms of how they're going to try to make sure that everyone's following safety protocol. Masks are required in the stands at all times unless you're actively eating or drinking. They're going to allow folks to order concessions on their phones to try to eliminate waiting in lines. At the end of the game, if anybody's been at a game in the Garden, you know those crowded stairwells leaving. They're going to attempt to have people leave the building similarly to the way you would leave an airplane, kind of like row by row. So there's a whole host of possible solutions that have been put into place, protections. We'll have to see how it actually works on the ground. But I think folks, for the most part, are cautiously optimistic that if we do this responsibly, we can do it safely.
All right, so kind of watching our clock. Why don't you pick one other of the Boston teams you want to check in on right now?
All right, so I hate to skip the Bruins because I love trying to convince you to be a Bruins fan.
I do.
But I want to move to
Hope springs eternal.
Because I do think what we have seen from the Patriots this past week has been staggering. I've been a Patriots fan all my life. I've never seen anything like it. They were by far the heaviest hitters in the beginnings of the NFL free agency. They've signed a ton of players, multiple tight ends, nose tackle, linebackers, receivers. They re-signed Cam Newton. That's a separate issue. We need about 20 minutes to fully get into that one. But I think it's clear that this team is aggressively approaching this season. And reloading with talent up and down the roster. Not to mention they're going to get guys back like Dante Hightower, who held out last year because of COVID concerns. To put it in perspective for you, they spent $81 million in the first few hours of NFL free agency this year. They spent $51 million over the last three off seasons combined. So that just gives you a sense of exactly how aggressive this team is right now.
Okay, so I hadn't realized that stat, and it makes me want to ask you, lots of people don't like teams that go out and buy victories. This sounds like,
well,
the Pats are,
it's also not
a
very successful model. Yeah, I mean, if you look at history, teams that spend big in free agency generally don't do that well because you're bidding against everybody else, so you end up paying guys more than what they're worth, and therefore you don't have enough money to fill in around them at the other positions. But there's a few factors here, I think, and not the least of which, Bill Belichick, we all know, is an evil genius, right? He can read the market better than anybody. So for the first time since 2011 this year, there was a lower salary cap, which means teams across the league, in many cases, had to shed players before they could worry about signing new players. So they had to basically get under the salary cap. Yeah.
Right. So just to clarify, salary cap is total amount you can pay the body of your players, correct?
Exactly. Last year was a little over $190 million. This year it's down around $180 million. So there are less teams bidding for these free agents. And also, the salary cap is expected to go back up next year when some new TV deals are announced. And so contracts that you sign right now, you probably have to pay a fair amount more for those same contracts next year. So Bill Belichick always thinking about value. I do think it is a factor that Tom Brady went out and won the Super Bowl his first year without the Patriots, not to mention the fact that the Patriots were pretty much a laughingstock last year. Even though they ended up 7-9, they at times looked horrible. And you know that had to just eat away at him.
So what are you going to be watching for as this team sort of gets together? Obviously, the season is a few months away, but people start watching now.
Yeah, the big question for me is quarterback. They re-signed Cam Newton. There were a lot of things working against him last year, and I like Cam as a player and as a person. He seems to be a pretty upstanding guy in the clubhouse. In terms of on the field, he did not look good last year. Now, to be fair, they didn't have the full offseason workouts. He was recovering from a shoulder surgery, so that could be a factor. And he did end up going under the COVID list with COVID about 4 or 5 weeks into the year. So there were a lot of things kind of working against him. I hope they have a plan A, though. I hope Cam is expected to be the backup, and they're either going to draft a young quarterback high in the draft or potentially sign or trade for somebody here that could fill that role, because a quarterback is really one of the most important positions in all of sports. You need that guy to set the tone and to get the ball to these wide receivers and tight ends that you've signed. Last year, Cam couldn't get the ball 10 yards down the field in the air. So we'll have to see kind of what moves they make there.
All right, we'll keep watching that. Now, in our remaining time, I want to take some time to recognize a couple of local Boston sports legends that we lost this week. I know you said you wanted to say something about Boston Marathon icon Dick Hoyt, so I'm going to let you take us out of the show with that. I'll take a moment first, then, to note the death of marvelous Marvin Hagler. He died in New Hampshire Saturday at age 66. I think it's really hard for some people to understand how big a sport boxing was in the 1980s, if you weren't sort of a sport age then. That was when Hagler was a great middleweight fighter. He came from Brockton, where he moved as a teenager, and he had to make a name for himself under the shadow of another Brockton legend, Rocky Marciano. He did it. He fought some legendary fights, and while fighting, to make a name for himself, so much so that literally he fought to make a name for himself. He changed his name to Marvelous. I watched actually a lot of boxing as a kid. That might surprise you, but I did. And he quit basically after a fight when I saw as a kid with Sugar Ray Leonard. It ended in a split decision, which means the judges picked the winner and they picked Leonard, which was a shock to Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And I remember for me, it was one of the first times in my young life that I realized that sports could actually be subjective, that winning and losing wasn't always just sort of a matter of how many points you scored. He was a fighter in his community, well-respected in the area, and I just want to note, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, again, died in New Hampshire over the weekend at age 66.
It's so interesting, and he was one of those guys. There's kind of two types of fighters in the boxing world. There's the media darlings, and then there's the guys that have to kind of scrap and claw for everything they get, and he was definitely the latter, and I think that's why so many folks kind of connected and identified with him. And as you mentioned, I do want to also recognize the passing of Dick Hoyt, who passed away yesterday at the age of 80. He was part of Team Hoyt. He pushed his son, Rick, who had cerebral palsy, in a special chair, and they would run every Boston Marathon up until 2014 was their last race. And actually yesterday, after the news of his passing, I went back and rewatched the finish of 2014 when Meb Keflezighi became the first American to win since 1983, the year after the marathon bombing. And I just was so moved by that, because you know, Team Hoyt represented everything that makes the Boston Marathon so incredibly special. You know, the triumph of individuals over adversity and the community coming together to support and cheer that. I don't know that anybody ever got a bigger ovation than Team Hoyt when they would go by the crowd literally the whole way down the 26.2 miles. I just wanted to play a little bit of sound from an interview yesterday. Dickson Russell spoke with WBR's Jack Lepiarz, and you have to hear this. Russell talking about how his father and brother got into running. Basically, Rick brought a flyer home from a fundraising race for a family whose son at Rick's high school had dove into a swimming pool and broke his neck. So Russell says his dad's only running a mile or two a week at that point, but Rick really wanted him and his dad to enter this race, and so they did, and I'll let Rick tell the rest of the story.
Everybody expected him to go, you know, the end of the street, turn around and come back, but they ran the entire 5 miles. And their claim to fame, they came in second to last, but not last, never been last in a race that they've entered. And when Rick crossed the finish line, there's a picture of him with this smile. And my dad says it is the biggest smile he's ever seen in his life. And when Rick went home that night, he got on his computer and he spelled out, "Dad, when we're running, I don't even feel like I'm handicapped anymore."
So that's Russell, Dick's son, telling that story. And I'm sure there's going to be an incredible funeral service, and I'm sure there'll be something at the Boston Marathon, which right now is scheduled for October 11th with a smaller field. But we will keep an eye on that as the year moves along.
Oh, what a great way to end. Chris, thanks for checking the score with us. Radio Boston's Chris Siderick.
Thanks for having me. Always fun.
Great to have you.